Next case is United States v. Avery. Appellant ready? Government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, judges of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Steve Dre, and along with my co-counsel, Captain Alex Hess, I represent the appellant, Specialist Robert Avery. Your Honor, if I could reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
The preemption doctrine prohibits the government from using Article 134 to ease its burden when Congress has occupied the field of supposed misconduct. Yet that is exactly what the government did here when it charged the appellant with an Article 134 making an indecent communication to a child instead of using Article 120 Bravo as required by the preemption doctrine. Congress has occupied the field of sexual abuse of children. In the development of the new 120 Bravo statute, the JSC note that the intent was to expand the definition of lewd act to include communicating indecent language to children. The report on which the Congress relied, the 2009 DOD report, noted that a recommendation was to consolidate everything into a comprehensive article to eliminate confusion, as acknowledged by the Senate report. Within the appendix.
Captain Dre, can I ask you about that?
Yes, sir.
So in your brief, reply brief on page 2, you talk about that. And you say that Congress evidently relied on this. What evidence is there that Congress did rely on it?
Did. Perhaps, I don't think there's evidence that they did other than that they pulled the indecent communication crime into 120 Bravo and put it at Charlie. That where before there was not an offense, here there is. And I think that there should be an assumption that when Congress is writing statutes based on recommendations given in reports that were ordered to be completed, that comments like where an Article 134 communicating indecent language to an adult still exists here, this crime against children has been pulled into 120 Bravo.
Okay, but here in your quote from the report of the Defense Task Force on Sexual Assault, it refers to it in the past tense. Article 120, as amended, sets forth this. This amendment also included. It doesn't say would do this. So what leads us to believe that Congress was relying on this as compared to this is simply an executive branch agency after the fact, without any analysis, without any citation to authority, saying this is what the legislative branch meant? And if that's the case, why should this court rely on this at all?
It's a fair point, Your Honor, and perhaps an overstatement to say that was evidence that Congress relied on it. But it is an understanding of the government that the enumeration of an offense was meant to encapsulate all sexual abuse against children.
To follow up on Judge Olson's question, was there anything in the report language for the Defense Authorization Act in which this appeared that evinced such an intent? Because normally when Congress does things like that, they put it in the report language.
Not that I necessarily was able to find, Your Honor. I will say that this conclusion, that Congress intended to occupy the field of sexual abuse against children, is acknowledged in the JSC notes, where they say that it was expanding the definition of lewd act to include the indecent communications to children, and also that three circuit courts.
But in that, do they engage in any analysis? Do they cite to any authority? And if not, why should this court grant any deference, give any weight to what DOD says about what the legislature did here?
Because the deference is that Congress, when they wrote this statute, and they clarified that they were intending, I guess clarify is improper here too, but where Congress wrote a statute that before had nothing about making indecent communication to their children, and now has over from 2006 until 2012, where in 2006 it just established a communication, but that fell outside the scope of an electronic communication. Then where Congress made a further effort in 2012 to pull in the rest of that misconduct, the sexual communications made to children, then that is clear intent. And I don't think the preemption doctrine does not require a, it may be in a perfect world.
Counsel, can I ask you a question about the way that you're going about this? I mean, I was under the impression that since what we're dealing with here is on the one hand an enumerated Article 120B offense, and on the other hand an Article 134 offense, that what we do is start with basically the elements, and that Article paragraph 60C5A basically says that you can't take one offense remove one of the elements based on that particular language. And yes, that has nothing to do with congressional intent or anything like that. It just has to do with the way we have dealt with enumerated offenses when you seek to create an Article 134 offense, because even though it's a listed Article 134 offense, it still is not a separate statute, right? I mean, the statute is Article 134.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm acknowledging the first prong of the preemption doctrine that does require a showing that Congress intended to occupy a field. And I do think that the development of this statute, this 120 Bravo, that was new in 2006, and its gradual intentional pulling in of indecent communications was purposeful to occupy that field. And here...
But do you disagree with this statement, irrespective of whether we can find a congressional intent to occupy the field or not, when we are comparing an enumerated article with an Article 134 offense, if the only difference is that you take away an element, that you can't do that?
Yes, sir. I agree with that. That's certainly the heart of the preemption doctrine, as understood by this court's predecessor.
The preemption doctrine with respect to these particular sorts of offenses, right, which is a general Article 134 and an enumerated article.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, may I ask a question? What would be a possible rational reason that Congress would want to decriminalize this kind of indecent language when spoken to children but not when spoken to adults?
So, Your Honor, I think there are several answers to that. I think first, and I'll get to the decriminalization at the end, but the first point I'd like to make on that is that context is really important for a determination of whether language is actually indecent. This court has acknowledged in Brinson and others that an appeals court must use an exacting ruler when language is sought to be prosecuted. And then we're going to throw somebody in a cage for something they say, that this court needs there needs to be a high burden. And so I say that because of that context and because it matters. Here, it's not that they're decriminalizing all inappropriate things. It's saying that it's really important that when a statement is made to a child and where perhaps the threshold of what someone says is lower than if they say it to an adult, that Congress is saying, but that the specific intent of the speaker is critical. It's so critical that it's an element, and we've defined it, and we've made that the minimum threshold. And so I also think that because of that context and because it matters, to use the word decriminalization here, I think it's more of an acknowledgement that if someone is not specifically intending to abuse or humiliate or degrade or sexually gratify their desires, if it is just a negligent or foolish thing that they said, that perhaps the baseline, the default starting point for courts and for prosecutors, that perhaps that's not a crime. Because it is language, and because this is a constitutional right to say most things, certainly constrained a bit in the military, but that a command has many tools to address something that they deem inappropriate. And so there are other mechanisms that that a command could use to address this this type of language if there's no intent, short of prosecution.
Counsel, that seems contrary to your argument, though, because your argument here is not that this didn't violate the Article 134 offense because it wasn't indecent. Your argument is that it didn't violate the Article 134 because it was preemptive. He was convicted of it under the Article 134 offense. If he had said this to an adult, he wouldn't be convicted, wouldn't he?
I do dispute that, Your Honor. I certainly don't concede that if he said this to an adult outside of an extraneous context, that not here, that perhaps that could be a crime.
Let me ask it a different way. If he had said this to a child before 120D was passed, would he be guilty?
Yes, Your Honor, because 120D...
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can I go back to Judge Maggs' first question, though? Is there any place for this court to look at this in terms of what Congress intended to say that these grossly offensive words were being used with a 13-year-old child, that if Congress had had this posed to them as a hypothetical, that members of Congress would have said, yeah, we want that criminalized?
So I won't speculate here about what Congress would want necessarily criminalized, except to say that if Congress really thought it was important to criminalize this type of language, they should have put it in 120 Bravo. They very well
could. Or why couldn't they just leave it alone with 134? Why did they have to take the step you're offering to them, which might have been fine, but why couldn't Congress say we're leaving 134 on the books and we're carving out the separate offense in 120B?
Congress could have done that, but there is no legislative obligation on Congress to say that these executive order definitions that are crimes in a sense but are not defined by Congress. There's no onus on the legislator to say not this, not that, not this. And I recognize that this court has used that Congress's inaction in that respect in other cases to find some level of congressional intent. But I'd say that those cases, like Anderson and Kick, there is a military nexus. There's a clear military nexus between the misconduct within 134 and why perhaps a command has a strong incentive to pursue that. And absent specific congressional language excising that from an executive order, this is a lot different than a negligent homicide or a giving secrets to the enemy type offense. Further, in those cases, there wasn't the clear and recent attempt to corral all like misconduct as there is here. Whereas since 2006, the Congress has really made an effort to pull in all crimes of sexual abuse against children within 120 Bravo.
Couldn't it be perceived, though, that you're flipping the burden here in terms of the issue of whether Congress intended to occupy the field? Don't we have to be able to affirmatively find an intent rather than, it seems your approach is the reverse, that in light of a lack of stated intent, then it goes your way?
I understand your question, Your Honor. I'd say, though, that the genesis of this court's acknowledgement of the preemption doctrine with Norris in 1953, there was no Congress didn't say, well, a wrongful taking, that for sure isn't falling in here. They defined the offenses, larceny, wrongful appropriation. There was no clear congressional language saying, but not a negligent taking, for instance. And so I think that if this court looks at the development of the preemption doctrine, that perhaps looking at that first few steps is informative and perhaps does indicate that it's not always looking for a specific congressional act or dictate to occupy a field, but that we can assume from the circumstances that the intent was Congress wants to encapsulate all similar misconduct.
Counsel, what about the alternative interpretation of what happened, which was we had the Article 134 offense, and Congress looked at it and said, okay, that's fine, but if you do it with a sexual intent, it's going to be a more serious crime, and we're going to give a more serious punishment. Not that we need to get rid of the other one, but because, of course, this is, the timing of this was the Article 134 offense has been there forever, and then Article 120B came after it. And why isn't it a more reasonable interpretation that Congress simply said, got it, that's an offense, but if you do it with a sexual intent, then it's a more serious offense, and it's going to be a more serious consequence?
Your Honor, my time is up. Should I?
Yes, answer the question, please.
Your Honor, I would answer that like this. First, that, again, that if I recognize this is perhaps acknowledged in your question, but that if Congress intended that to be an offense, they could have pulled it in within 120 Bravo. I don't think that's your exact question, but there's that. Additionally, the second part of that is that if Congress had said, okay, yes, that is also a different type of misconduct, I would answer that with just the general baseline doctrinal principle of preemption that the executive branch really can't do that, that they can't lop off this critical element that is the very idea of the preemption doctrine, and why it is here is that the executive cannot remove something as important as the specific intent.
Thank you, counsel.
Yes, sir.
Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Suki, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Mark Emon. Myself, along with Major Dustin Myrie, represent the United States. Appellant asks this court to do something unprecedented, to declare a longstanding presidentially listed offense preempted. This court should decline to do so for three reasons. First, appellant absurdly presumes that by enacting Article 120 Bravo, Congress intended to give less protection from indecent communication to children than that given to adults. Second, appellant has not shown that Article 120 Bravo is intended to supersede the presidentially listed offense. And third, even if there was error in this case, such error was not plain and obvious. Turning to my first point.
So let me start with your last point. Let's say that we disagree with your first 2 points and find that indeed, irrespective of congressional intent with respect, irrespective of what the executive branch intended when it wrote in the Article 134 offense, right, that it's preempted. Is the test whether it was plain and obvious error or is there just it failed to state an offense? Isn't that what the test would be then?
Your Honor, given that appellant did not raise this issue at the trial level or at the service court level, this court in...
But what I'm saying is, does that matter? I mean, if it's preempted, then there is no offense. You understand that?
Yes, Your Honor. However, since it was not raised at the lower courts, this court in Watkins stated that it would be a plain error analysis. Appellant absurdly relies on the presumption that when Congress enacted Article 120 Bravo, a statute which was enacted to protect children, that Congress intended to give children less protection than that which is given to adults.
Let me just ask you a question
go ahead.
About that, counsel, which is Congress intended to enact Article 120B, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it includes two intent elements, right, that they have to have the intent to communicate and they have the intent to humiliate, degrade, or satisfy their sexual desires, right? Did Congress have any input into the executive branch description of an Article 134 offense?
They did not, Your Honor.
And I'm not wrong, am I, that the manual says that one of the limitations on Article 134 preemption is that you cannot have an Article 134 offense that mimics an enumerated offense and takes away an element such as intent. Isn't that exactly what it says?
That is what it says, Your Honor.
So however ridiculous the result may be, is that our job to fix it, or is it your job to go to Congress and ask them to fix it?
Well, Your Honor, this court has applied a great restriction on the preemption doctrine when it said in Anderson that Congress, it has to be shown by appellant that Congress intended to fully occupy the field as it applies to those offenses. So even if there is a removal of one element, this court in Anderson said that that is not enough. There must be shown an intent for Congress to fully occupy that space. And we don't have that in this case. It would be absurd to think that Congress intended for an appellant, for a soldier to be able to say obscene language to children as long as they don't have the requisite intent, but that they can't say the same things to adults.
Counsel, in your brief, you pound away on this supposed dichotomy. There's statements made with sexual intent, and there's statements not. I have a real problem wrapping my head around the notion that there can be indecent language using the definition of indecent language in the manual, counter to societal standards and all that stuff, without there being some sexual quotient. In other words, isn't this whole thing, I hate to say it, but so pregnant with sexual intent that it pops up no matter what?
A couple points to that, Your Honor. We don't even need to come up with hypotheticals. As seen in this case, appellant alleged that
they're exchanging sexually charged language, and you say there's no sex here?
However, there's no intent to sexually abuse, Your Honor. Additionally, as seen in Guidardo, when appellant discussed...
No, there's no intent on the appellant's part to sexually abuse? Well, that's only, number one, that's only part of it. It's also, satisfying his own desires. And you don't think that language was absolutely, totally sexually charged? I mean, what were they doing?
Well, Your Honor, under the Supreme Court precedent in Batchelder, if there are two applicable offenses, the prosecution may charge either one. So...
That's not my question. My question is this notion of indecent language without some sexual charge a chimera?
Well, Your Honor, under the definition, it says that it covers grossly vulgar language, which would corrupt morals. This would also include racist language, sexist language, bigotry.
Oh, now you're getting in First Amendment territory there. I suppose if you want to, you could say that all cussing in the armed forces violates 134, but do you really want to go there?
And the government's not trying to bring it to all cussing, Your Honor. However,
well, so tell me where language that fits into that definition that's indecent and has no sexual quotient. What is it, and has no sexual quotient?
Your Honor, service members have great restrictions to their rights, including the First Amendment. If a soldier,
I'm aware of that. No, that's go ahead.
Were to go to a child and yell racial epithets to it, yell sexist language, yell bigoted language at that child, this would not meet the definition under Article 120 Bravo of sexual abuse. However, it would fall under Article 134.
I guess my question is this, counsel, right? Anderson was written in 2010. Since then, we've had a number of decisions by this court in which we focused extensively on the importance of intent. We've also focused significantly on not allowing the government to plead away from an offense that requires intent by pleading it under Article 134. So given those recent decisions, what are we to make of your argument?
Your Honor, Alanis applied to speech which may be protected under the First Amendment. And the Supreme Court in Roth and Miller stated multiple times that obscene language does not fall under First Amendment protections. So Alanis is inapplicable.
I'm not talking about the First Amendment aspects, right? I'm talking about the renewed interest by the Supreme Court and by this court on the importance of a mens rea, right, for a particular offense. And also in the case of our court, it seems to me at least that we focus somewhat over the last several years on this notion that we're not going to allow, when there is an enumerated offense that has an intent element, that we're not going to allow the government to escape that requirement by pleading something under Article 134, whether it is an enumerated Article 134 offense or not. I should say a listed Article 134 offense. So I just ask, what is your response to that?
Well, the renewed vigor toward intent elements, Your Honor, regards separating innocent from criminal conduct. And with the definition of indecent, that separates conduct which is innocent from that which is criminally prosecutable. A soldier should not believe that it is perfectly reasonable to be able to call a 13-year-old child the obscene, a cum-guzzling gutter slut, as stated in this case. That no appellant, especially within the military, would believe that that is innocent conduct, to say that to a child. And, Your Honor, if Congress did intend to limit the protections which are given to children, they should have stated that expressly. Indecent communication has existed in the MCM since 1969. It is a longstanding military offense, and Congress doesn't legislate on a blank slate. They clearly knew about its existence at the time.
But it's not a statute.
It is not a statute, Your Honor. However, this court in Kick said that for longstanding military offenses, if Congress intends to eliminate them, they should expressly indicate it. This court stated Congress could have acted in the formulation of the 1969 amendments to the code to eliminate negligent homicide as a criminal offense if it so desired. Additionally, this court reiterated that in 2010 in Anderson when it said Congress was clearly free to state Article 104 supersedes Article 134 in this context. So Congress has been on notice for 40 years of how to eliminate longstanding military offenses if they so wish to. However, even with this direction from this court, Congress was silent in 2012, silent in 2016, and silent in 2019.
Is this a purely military offense?
Your Honor, the military does have an interest in indecent communication.
Well, no, but your whole thing is the premise in Kick was if you're going to dump a longstanding, purely military offense, you got to say so. What I'm saying is this a purely military offense, or is that simply irrelevant?
Well, given that obscene language is punished by both the federal government as well as state government.
Right, which way does that cut?
Well, Your Honor, a military base is the ultimate gated community, and the commander of that base, including the president who oversees all of those bases, has an interest in defending that community. There's guards at the gate, so people who live within it, the spouses, the children that are all dependents of their military service members, should know that they are protected within those walls. And they should know that they're protected from things such as indecent communication. Within Kick, this court said that it should be extremely reluctant to find preemption without express indication from Congress. This court should not go hunting for preemption. It should be abundantly clear. And Kick
well,
is directly.
I think that's Judge Ryan's point.
It just seems to me the way that the specification is drafted to include the fact that it's a child under the age of 16, right? That it basically mimics Article 120B without the intent elements, right?
Well, Your Honor, even if it lacks the intent, this court has found numerous types of offenses valid under Article 134, even with a reduced intent. For example, the strongest case, most directly on point, is Kick, where this court found that negligent homicide is not preempted, even though it carries a lesser degree of intent than Articles 118 and 119. And this court reasoned that it's a long-standing offense which existed separate and apart from murder and manslaughter. And thus, this court required direct language from Congress that it meant to eliminate the offense. Similarly, indecent communication to a child has existed for more than 50 years as a military offense. It existed separate and apart from Article 120 Bravo, and its predecessor indecent acts or liberties with a child under Article 134. And in this case, we don't even just have one set of amendments like we saw in Kick in the 1969 amendments. We have three separate revisions. And it is not on the government to show that Congress didn't intend to do this. It's on appellate to show that they did intend to fully occupy this space. So this court should, like in Kick, require direct language that they meant to eliminate the offense of indecent communication to a child. It is unreasonable to believe that Congress intended to strip children of protections which were given to children that would still be given to adults under appellant's view. It is far more reasonable to conclude that by Congress remaining silent, they wished to continue the pattern of coexistence between these two offenses. And this was shared by the president, as the president didn't remove the offense of indecent communication under Article 134 either, which indicates that he believed that the two offenses could coexist and that it didn't violate his preemption doctrine that he promulgates. He continued to list a separate maximum punishment, continued to list it within the sample specification, and we know that the president knows how to eliminate offenses under Article 134 because in 2007, when Congress pulled offenses from 134 to 120, the president rightly deleted those offenses under Article 134. However, he continued to leave indecent communication to a child with a separate maximum punishment and list it within the separate sample specification.
Captain Eden, admittedly, I mean, maybe you don't agree with me, but this situation is a little bit different than either Kick or Anderson, don't you think? I mean, in this case, we have a statute that seemingly, arguably, tries to draw in all offenses regarding children, right? That's very different than the situations you had in Kick or Anderson. And so I'm making that point to ask you this. When it's kind of a close call, or whether there is some confusion or question about preemption between an enumerated offense set out by Congress and a listed offense set out by the president, why don't we just we presume that Congress was right? I mean, Congress, if there's a tie between Congress and the president loses, doesn't he?
He does, Your Honor. If Congress specifically stated that they intended to eliminate this offense, then sure.
But if he doesn't specifically say that or expressly, but there's some indication, I mean, you have to admit there's some indication. Maybe you don't.
Your Honor, the only indication that Congress changed anything was the elimination of the presence requirement. Article 120 Bravo Charlie still prescribes the same conduct which was covered under indecent acts or liberties under 134, which...
I think his point is somewhat different, counsel, which is that Article 120B brought in under its aegis, right, all the offenses that involve children. I mean, you can disagree with that, but it, I mean, they did consolidate a bunch of different things and got rid of most Article 134 offenses that involve children. And so I think the point is isn't that some indication that, in fact, they did intend to take all sex offenses involving children and place them within one consolidated statute?
Right. I mean, you'd have to admit that some indication.
Maybe you don't.
There's some indication based on the removal of the presence requirement. However, Congress pulled various offenses from 134. They split in indecent acts or liberties with a child was split into four different offenses in 2007. And then it was repacked in 2012. It's essentially the same offense as indecent acts or liberties with a child, just under Article 120 Bravo Charlie instead, with the removal of the presence requirement. It's the same offense, just in a different spot.
Yeah, I think you just simply disagree with my character, which is okay. I'm all right with that. You can disagree with me that there is some indication just by the fact that they have Congress included all of these offenses as they pertain to children. So I think you and I might disagree on that.
But apparently. The question I have is, in terms of Congress compiling everything under 120B, for child sexual offenses. Is the 134 offense that we're talking about, is that a sexual offense against a child as compared to it having a negative effect on people's perception of the military and so forth?
So under 134, it does not constitute sexual abuse of a child or sexual predation, which this court in Wheeler where...
So that's the distinction between the point that Judge Sparks is making. Your position is that, yes, Congress may have consolidated all sexual offenses against a child in 120B, but the 134 offense that is at issue here is not a sexual offense against a child.
Yes, Your Honor. Just as Judge Maggs said earlier, there's a lesser degree of offenses. So you have assault, indecent exposure, indecent communication, that all represent a lesser class of indecency offenses. However, if they are committed with the intent to abuse, degrade, humiliate, which would constitute sexual abuse, then they fall into a higher class of offenses. And that's represented by the maximum punishments. The maximum punishment for 120 Bravo is 15 years. The maximum punishment for indecent communication to a child is only 2. And this court in United States versus Brown, all the way back in 1953, made this distinction between the higher class of offenses, which are targeted at sexual predation, and this lesser class of general indecency offenses. While there may be some overlap between the two, that does not show that Congress intended to blanket the field for all indecent communication which is expressed to children. Now, even if there is error in this case, such error was not plain and obvious. If this court were to find error, the government would certainly be in good company, as Congress did not express that it intended to eliminate the 134 offense. The president continued to list it. This court directly directed practitioners to utilize the listed offense in its opinion in Guardado as recently as 2017, the military judge missed it and trial defense. It continues to be listed with a separate maximum punishment and in the sample spec.
Right, but that doesn't that go to notice? I mean, if you're saying there is no prejudice, I go back to what Judge Ryan mentioned earlier. If this is error, the remaining offense at issue here is not an offense, right? Can the accused be properly convicted of something that's not a crime?
Chief Judge, I see that my time has elapsed.
Answer the question.
Wouldn't that be the prejudice on its face?
Sir, under the plain error analysis, there are 3 prongs. So it's error, plain error, and prejudice. So while
well,
that
pretty
would
plain.
Go to the third prong and the government concedes prejudice, if you do find plain error, that second prong.
You do concede that it would be prejudicial?
That it would be prejudicial, Your Honor. However, this court would have to find not only that there is error, but that such error was plain and obvious.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal.
I'd first like to address the government's use of United States v. Kick, and I think this goes, Your Honor, Judge Maggs, to your question that you asked of me about perhaps Congress just meant to leave this lesser standard. And again, and Judge Stuckey, you recognize this, United States versus Kick is very particularized, recognizing that the military has had a long-standing, its sole purpose really is to fight and win wars, and so it requires perhaps daily practice with deadly weapons. And so negligence, it makes sense that the executive, the commander, has a prerogative to make sure there is absolute care in managing those weapons and dangerous items. There is no such corollary with language spoken to children. I acknowledge that certainly the nature of the military community exists and is important to commanders, but again, there are tools. The default for this court doesn't, I ask that this court not default to everything stated that somebody could think was a crime, must be a crime. I'm not saying that what he said was right or that similar things wouldn't be right or would be acceptable, but there are many tools short of prosecuting someone. And while I acknowledge that there's a serious difference between a lewd act punishment, which includes with the maximum punishment is 15 years, and this would be 2, I'd argue that few panels hopefully are sensitive to the
matter. Well, but all that goes to prosecutorial discretion, doesn't it? I mean, you heard me earlier. I have qualms about this whole, how this whole statutory structure fits together. But you're saying, well, not everything's a crime, and they ought to not just pull something out and prosecute it. Well, that may well be good policy, but that's ultimately the government's call, isn't it?
Well, it would be, except Congress has imposed a strict limitation on the use of Article 134. A short statute that gives commanders incredible discretion is limited in the first sentence of that statute, not specifically mentioned within the enumerated code. So Congress clearly has an interest and a vested interest in defining clearly those crimes that result in confining people. And here, this charge is the exact result of the government being able to lop off important elements and ease its burden. And so, pending questions, I'll conclude there.
Thank you, counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. Court is in recess pending further order of the court.